Can I have your permission to use voice memos thingy?
Of course.
Alright, hopefully it picks it up. I don't know. No, mommy, think I'll go order. you did NJ Seeds?
Nah, I did white foundation.
Oh, you did right foundation.
White foundation.
White. WIJIGHT.
Yep.
White foundation. What'd you hear about it?
I heard about it first. So I'm the last person in my family to go. So like my brothers went through white foundation, and they had heard about it through my church.
Your church?
Yeah, there was this lady, this, you know, old lady at my church whose son was one of, like, the OG White Foundation scholars, like, back when it started in the 80s.
Yeah.
And so the White Foundation had a good part and has, well, had and has a good partnership with my church because of this woman. So basically, this woman told my mom to have my brother apply. Because when we first came from Ghana, my brother was in the sixth grade.
Mm.
So he was, like, just around the age of getting ready. And, like, in Ghana, boarding school is super common.
Yeah.
So, like, my mother was like, oh, there's boarding schools here, too? Bet. So she basically had my brothers go through it, and then my other brother went after, and then me, like, later.
So, like, what grade did you, like, wait, so, like, how does the whole process start?
So the process of White Foundation starts the summer after your seventh grade year. So in your summer before eighth grade, you basically spend, I think it's 5 weeks or something like that. But you spend the majority of your summer taking classes and doing activities at the White Foundation office. And it's called the Scholars, it's called STEP. It's like summer teaching enrichment program or something like that. And when you're in STEP, you basically... So the White Foundation, they accept more than they can handle.
Yes.
And then at the end of the summer session, they do a big cut. And then at the end of the fall, they do another cut. And then they do one last cut, like a super tiny cut, in like February or something.
So there's the winter cut. In summer, one in fall...
Uh-huh.
And then one, like...
And then one, like, small final one. And basically, how these interview rounds go is that at the end of the summer, you're evaluated by your teachers and the interns who, like, are basically your chaperones for the summer.
Mm-hmm.
And it's based partially on grades, like, don't fail.
Yeah.
But it's also based partially and actually quite hugely on behavior.
Yeah.
So you may not be the brightest kid,
but if you can behave,
you know, maybe an average student, but if you show up every day with the right attitude, if you're courteous, if you're, you know, receptive to feedback from the teachers, then that's a good sign that you're going to be sticking around.
Yeah.
So and that's the summer evaluation. At the end of the summer, we take our SSATs. And it's your first go round at it, so you're just kind of like, they're just taking it. It's a benchmark score, pretty much.
Yeah.
And then, based off of all of that, in the fall, your classes get reconfigured. So, let's say you start at, like, the top level for math and the medium level for English. If at the end of the summer, you get better in math, you get better in English, or worse in math, or worse in English, then they reconfigure. So in the fall, you know, classes look differently. And in the fall, because now that school has started again, during the summer, you go Monday through Friday. It's like a Monday through Friday, 9 to 5 type deal. In the fall, you go Wednesday evenings and Saturday mornings.
Wednesday evening, Saturday morning. Okay.
Yeah. So like Wednesday, it would be from like 4 to 7 type. And then on Saturdays, it'd be, like, from 9 to noon or 9 to 1 type.
And that was during the fall?
That was during the fall. Well, that's during the whole entirety of your 8th grade year.
Yeah.
Like, that's what it looks like once you make it past the summer cut. That's what your fall looks like. And then, at the end of the fall, you take another SSAT, And once you take that SSAT, you take the SSAT, and then you also sit down with the Board of Trustees and have, like, an interview, yeah. like an entry interview or whatever. So the fall is basically, it's important because that's where, like, more or less the final cuts will happen. Like, the winter cuts are very rare. Like, I'm telling, like, one, maybe two people will get cut in the winter.
Yeah, and that's off grades, right?
But the fall one, so what?
That's off grades?
Yeah, like it's behavior? Off of grades, behavior, like, the same thing, behavior. Normally, when people get kicked out in the winter, it's because they either have, like, terrible grades, like, the kind of grades that you cannot even finesse to get into a boarding school with, or you have terrible behavior, like, you pick up fights, you just a mess.
Yeah.
And also, like, any kind of disciplinary action at your school, like, let's say you get suspended from your school, that's a boot. So the winter, the fall is where basically the big work of meeting, sitting down with the Board of Trustees, taking the SSAT scores that you're probably going to apply to boarding school with. And the fall is also important because that's when you get your list.
List.
Of schools. Yeah, you get a list of schools. So the White Foundation basically, based off of a series of factors, cultivate a list of schools, normally around 10 to 13 is the sweet spot.
Yeah.
But they cultivate your list of boarding schools, and they do the same thing for college, but they cultivate a list based off of the location that you want to be. So they give you like a questionnaire, and then they also give your parents a questionnaire. Okay. So then they craft a boarding school list based off of, like, what you and your parents want in terms of location, in terms of distance from home, in terms of school size, in terms of whether it's co-ed or single-sexed, whether it's, what's the other thing? Yeah, no, that's about it.
So, do they ever, and so the program is specifically targeted towards, as to, like, at least from your knowledge, like, you know, the purpose of the program is just to get you into a boarding school?
Yes. White Foundation, its sole purpose is that everyone who is a White Foundation scholar attended a prep school. Normally in New England, but, you know, some people go down south. Very rarely do people go out west. It's really kind of designed for you to be going to boarding schools in and around New England and in the greater, like, North Atlantic area.
So nobody went to, like, you know, the local, like, New Jersey, like, Catholic school, or, like, the best Catholic school, or, like, the best school in New Jersey. It was just, like, out, just ship them out?
If you could go to a boarding school in New Jersey, but the point is you must board. Like, you will be a boarding student. Yeah. Like, it's like if you did Seeds, for example.
Yeah.
Seeds, you have the option to go to a private school, a boarding school, or you could honestly go to, like, I had friends who went to my local public school. Like, it is what it is. But White Foundation, you're going to go to boarding school, and you're going to be a boarder. You're not a day student.
So, Brianna did this program, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
And so did Nelson. Yeah, Nelson is in my class. Yeah. I've been knowing Nelson since that summer.
And it's just, like, one summer, and that's just summer before 8th grade?
Yeah, so it's just that summer before 8th grade. But then, the fall, you have all your fall stuff. And then that following summer, you do, basically, you spend a summer at a boarding school. You get placed. So I was placed at Choate because I was going to school in Connecticut. Other people get placed other places based off of either location or whatever. And you're very rarely alone. Like, I was there with three other people in my class for the summer. So it was four of us from White Foundation at that Choate summer program. Other schools had three, two, four, five, but, like, the point is you spend, again, another, like, 5-6 weeks a summer immersing yourself in what boarding school life is going to be like.
And this is before you... So you spend that summer after 8th grade?
Yes. This is after you've graduated from middle school, like, the summer right before you're about to go.
Did you know where you were going at this point?
Yes.
Okay.
I did.
So where were you going to go?
So I went to, where I went to high school is Westminster School. It's in Connecticut. It's in Simsbury, Connecticut. It's like a small school. And for the summer, I went to Choate, which is one of our rivals. Choate is a bigger school. It's like a dial plus. It's in Wallingford, Connecticut, which is about an hour away from us at Westminster. And, the part of the reason, most people, like some people, one of the people I went to Choate summer programs with was going to Choate in the fall.
Yeah.
So she was able to meet like professors and some people that she was going to be there with.
Yeah.
And that was fortunate enough for her, but like my school didn't have a summer program like that because it's not a big school.
Yeah.
So they basically had me go to like that program. It also, like, Taft has a summer program. My brother went to Taft, and he went to Taft summer program as well. Yeah. Like, my brothers, they went to the summer programs of their boarding schools. Okay. So, like, my oldest brother went to Exeter, and he went to Exeter summer programs. My other brother went to Taft summer programs. I would have if my school had one, but it didn't. So, Choate was the next best option.
Wow. And, dang. So, when it came to, like, That or at least like throughout the entire, so you know, you heard about it word of mouth, right? And then like I guess you applied to it, like using the information that you already had, like you probably had to do an application for the program. Mm-hmm. They interviewed for it too, right? And mm-hmm. and then, like, you know, you get in, and then it's like, at least like throughout this entire time, like, you know that they just want you to go to boarding school, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So, when it came to, like, you know, you doing everything, or at least, like, the process throughout, like, did they talk about, like, how boarding school culture was, or at least, like, you know, what you were going to get into and stuff? What were the high school talks about?
So, during your, I'll focus more on the eighth grade. Like, eighth grade, the summer is one thing. The summer is just an introduction. Eighth grade, over the course of your eighth grade year, is when all of this is happening. So when you go to your classes on Wednesday and Saturday, you basically have, you know, classes that are, one, meant to supplement you academically at your school. So, like, for example, we took Algebra 1 and, you know, we read a lot of books, yeah. You know, To Kill a Mockingbird and all that stuff. So we were definitely academically prepared in that sense. And then the second half of the day, or like the time, would be spent talking with our directors and our like staff that weren't teachers. And that would be the time where we would have kind of like open forums where people could ask questions about, you know, certain things related to boarding school. We would have workshops. I remember there was this one workshop we did where it's basically the class directly above you, so the people who are freshmen in boarding schools come back during, like, I don't know, Thanksgiving break or some one of the breaks, and there's kind of like an open forum Q&A where we ask them, like, what's up? So, you know, people ask questions about hair and, you know, having a white roommate and being far away from home and food. You know, this is the first time people are ever working with a dining hall. Like, how does that go? So, you know, we ask all those questions. And then also during all of this, it's kind of we interview and we visit the campuses of all these schools. It's like college. So once we have our list, whenever they give us our list, I actually don't know when, but at some point over the fall when they give us our list, we have the fall and then the subsequent spring to basically book either campus tours, which the White Foundation helps us to do,
yeah.
Or White Foundation would have reps come down to the office and they could do interviews there. So, like, in my case, I think I was able to visit a lot of the schools just because, like, my one, my parents had time, and yeah. two, I, like, some of the schools were, like, places my brother went, so, like, I didn't visit Exeter or Taft because I already knew what they looked like. And more importantly, some of the other schools I didn't visit because I was there on the visit with my brothers.
Yeah.
So a lot of the, like, Choate was a school that I never went with my brothers. So, like, I went to Choate to visit and interview there. I went to Westminster, took a tour and visited there. I went to other schools, that I could go. I didn't go anywhere too far up, but definitely schools around the Connecticut area. Yeah, I hit them out real quick. And then the other schools that were, like, farther up in New Hampshire and stuff, I just interviewed at the office.
Dang. So would you say that, like, throughout the program, like, you were supported by, like, the foundation in terms of, like making a conscious decision about, like, where you would be going?
Yeah, I definitely felt as if my case is a little different because, like, I'm a legacy, if you will. Like my brothers have been.
That's crazy.
Like, the foundation knew me from when I was in the first grade. Like, they always knew That's who crazy. I was. So, you know, I'd be at the little Christmas party. Like, they knew who I was. And more importantly, they knew my parents. So, like, for me, a lot of the difficulties that many people face with these programs in terms of having to educate their parents on the process, like, I didn't have to do that. Like, my parents just sat down and they were like, all right, so you trying to go where your brothers went or somewhere else? And that was really how the conversation started. And then they were like, it was really easy for me. I felt supported from my family, especially. I had a lot of personal knowledge, but that couldn't have come without kind of the knowledge that the foundation impacted when my parents were doing it with my brothers. So I do feel, and even personally, like, I never had a problem asking somebody in the office a question about anything, whether it had to do with money, whether it had to do with the future college process, whether it had to do with, you know, getting money for books. Like, yeah, no, that was never an issue.
So, like, wow. So while you were, yeah, because I remember, like, Brianna told me that, like, they gave money for books, and like he's like, you had to send a list and stuff, and, like, they would give you the money for the books or something like that. And kind of, like,
yeah,
like, even in college, it's the same thing too, right? Or
Well, in college is just a check. So, personally, it's easier to get the money in college than it is in boarding school. So, like, for example, I never, or maybe I did it, maybe once, but I don't recall actually ever asking White Foundation for assistance with books. Because, yeah, I don't know why I didn't, but I didn't. And for some people, like, I didn't qualify. So White Foundation has, like, a financial stratification strategy. So, like, basically, if you, so you have to be within a certain tax bracket to even qualify to be a White Foundation scholar.
Yeah.
I think back when I was going, you had to be, your combined family income had to be less than $200,000. So, like, if your parents made, you know, $200,000, like, you just couldn't be in the White Foundation. You were rich enough to do this shit on your own. So, and then from there, depending on your financials there, is how you were able to negotiate, like, books. So, like, for example, I don't know how much my parents made, but my parents made more money than you could to qualify for getting books assistance.
Okay.
So, like, Bria Nums might have got assistance. I never got assistance. And I think that's the reason.
Wow. Would you, so would you say that, like, you were prepared, or like that what they did prepared you enough for like the you know, coming to that boarding school, like that first day, like that first month, you know, like
absolutely not. no shade at these programs, but absolutely nothing can prepare you for that culture shock at such a young age. There's nothing that can prepare you for that. The only thing that can prepare you for that is to go to junior boarding school.
Junior boarding school?
In my opinion. Yeah, that exists. I didn't know that until I got to boarding school, but yeah, junior boarding school exists. Basically, junior boarding school is like, they normally start in the sixth or... It's basically boarding school for middle school.
Yeah.
So, like, there aren't a lot of junior boarding schools. Like, there are a lot of day schools that have the high school be, like Milton, for example. Milton is a K-12 school. However, only the high school is boarding.
Yeah, Wayne went to that. But
yeah, Wayne went there. However, there are some schools. I only know of the ones in Connecticut because that's, you know, where I went to school. But like in Connecticut, some schools like Rectory, Fay, the Fay School, Fessenden, Eagle Brook. These are all junior boarding schools, and their ideas when they were created were for them to be feeder schools to the boarding schools. So like Fezzi and Fay, they feed into schools like Choate, like Westminster, you know, in Connecticut. Eagle Brook was directly meant to be like Eagle Brook. It's in Massachusetts. It's in Deerfield, Massachusetts. So Eagle Brook was meant to be a feeder school to Deerfield, yeah. And Deerfield was meant to be a feeder school to Dartmouth.
Yeah,
that's why all their colors are green.
Yeah.
So like that, like a lot of these junior boarding schools and boarding schools in general, like Exeter is a feeder school to Harvard, and Andover is a feeder school to Yale. Yeah. Like a lot of these boarding schools were designed that way. So the same thing is true of these junior boarding schools.
Wow.
Yeah. So to answer your question, yeah, no. Like, I do thank the White Foundation for everything that they did. They definitely helped me more than some of my other friends, in terms of, I won't even always say academically, because yeah, it's just like there are so many other factors that contribute to your academic success at these boarding schools, in the same way like there's so many other factors that contribute to your academic success in college, and a lot of those factors are social and socioeconomic. Like, I had to reconcile in my first couple of months the fact that like I was the only black girl in my grade. I was the only, so a grade of 80 students, 80 or so students, and I'm the only person that looks like me. I had to reconcile that. I had to reconcile a roommate who literally thought I was going to do physical harm to her as she slept because I was from North New Jersey. I had to reconcile the fact that I could not afford to, you know, splurge and like order every night and do all that other stuff. I had to reconcile the fact that my parents couldn't take off work to visit me every week and, you know, watch my basketball games. Like, these are things that like no foundation can prep you for, and that's just the fact.
Were there ever kids that, like, you know, in the White Foundation that just couldn't take it, like, that couldn't take the boarding school life?
Yeah, I know of some. Like, it was basically, like, every class or so, or every couple of classes, you hear the stories of kids who either get kicked out or drop out of boarding school. And in my class, I can't even recall who or what. I think for the most part, most of us made it through boarding school. Some people had to repeat classes. Some people had to switch schools. But for the most part, like, once you get into the boarding school system, you tend to stay. You may not be at the same school, but you tend to make it out. Whether it be in 4 years or five. So yeah, I'll
say
that.
Where did Nelson go to?
But who?
Where did Nelson go?
Nelson went to a school called Chapel Hill Chauncey Hall, which is in Massachusetts.
Okay.
that school's like the UN. Like their school is basically like half international students. Yeah. Like the whites are the minority, or at least they're half or less than half. That's cool, the UN.
Do you think that there was anything that like they could have done to prepare you better, or like, you know?
Like, honestly, yes and no. Like, yes and no. I think that they could have been a bit more. I feel like White Foundation's focus was definitely on getting us academically acclimated. So making sure that, and that's important, you know, we inner city kids, like my public school was broken, you know, the whole North public school scandal, like yeah. We all up in it. So like, I understand the kind of necessity to make sure that we were academically competitive, because honestly, that's what was going to get us into these schools in the first place. Yeah. And then on top of that, that was going to keep us from failing in these schools. However, I will say that they could have done a bit more in terms of having classes that weren't so academic in nature, and leveraging as best as they could kind of their network in terms of having current boarding school students talk to us more, or even college students, like whoever they could who had personally gone through that boarding school process, come and talk to us more. Because, you know, I just feel like when I went to CHOAT summer programs, that was really cool because I was there. You know, CHOAT is a big school, and, you know, CHOAT summer programs had a lot of international kids and a lot of, and I went there with three other people who I knew. But CHOAT summer programs was a huge catfish, because when I got to school in the fall, I realized that it's just me at this school.
Yeah.
This school that I'm supposed to attend for the next 4 years is basically a quarter of the size of CHOAT. And it's 90% white with like a 5% in it. Like, it's just, it had such different demographics from the summer program, because I had a great experience at CHOAT summer programs. Yeah. And then the fall hit and I was like, ugh. So, yeah.
It reminds me of just, like, how, you know, on Admitted Students Weekend, or, like, yeah, Diversity Weekends, like, you know, a lot of the first years, at least this year, like, told me, like, yeah, you know, like where the fuck are, where are the black kids at? Like, you know, we saw...
It's a catfish. It's a real catfish, yeah.
So, it's just funny how, like, you know, there's this... The system just, like, repeats itself, and just, like, the traditions and everything they do to get, like, students like us in there... In their classes, it's like basically you kind of have to like bait them, you know, you show them one reality, you show them one side of it, when that's like not everyone's gonna go to that school, you know, not everyone is like gonna even be there. So damn, I really relate to your experience.
Exactly.
When it comes to like I don't want to take up more of your time, but like when it comes to like
no, that's good.
When it comes to what's it called, the people that you had, the people that you know in the program, like, you know, obviously, like, you know, you're a fucking anthro student and shit, and it's, like,
mm-hmm.
or at least, like, the brain drain, and kind of, like, your whole take on, like, an education student as well, you know, like, you're, like, looking at your experience, like, from that lens, like, what has that made you kind of, like, realize about, like, the whole, like, kind of just, like, the thing that you were a part of, the program that you were a part of, you know?
I mean, these programs are... They're complicated because within the community, they are exemplary. You know, if you're a White Foundation scholar, like, your community is very proud of you in terms of, like, you've been selected, you've been deemed kind of worthy, in a sense, to change the trajectory of your life. And that's not an understatement. Like, without a doubt, White Foundation has 100% changed the trajectory of my life from the second my brother went to Exeter on. Because at the end of the day, it's about knowledge. So in that way, I think the White Foundation, Seeds, ABC, Prep for Prep, all of them, they're good. They do, like, invaluable good for the community because they give knowledge to people who would have never, ever, ever even thought about having it. Like, to the point that, like, my mother had no idea that there were boarding schools in this country, even though boarding schools are literally not, they're European-born tradition. Mm-hmm. Like, if Ghana has boarding schools, of course the U.S. gonna have boarding schools. But, you see, that shows that disconnect, the fact that, like, niggas did not have knowledge. So these programs bring knowledge to people. On the flip side, though, these programs are run and heavily funded by white men who are basically, they're basically feeder schools, just in a different way. So, like, Mr. White, he was actually an alumnus of Bowdoin, so Bowdoin is his alma mater, and he went to the Hill School, which is a boarding school in Pennsylvania. Mm-hmm. So what he did basically is kind of just, at first it started off with the Hill School and basically, like, other admissions reps he knew around the Pennsylvania area. And then over time, they made more connections with more boarding schools. But at the end of the day, these programs are more built on kind of personal connections that then get institutionalized. So in that way, they're doing what the big prep schools were designed to do, just at an earlier level and with black and brown kids. So in that way, I have, like, my tiniest bit of qualms with it, because I'm like, you're kind of picking, like, don't get me wrong, there are a lot of talented, smarter and brighter kids than I was who did not get selected or make it through the White Foundation process. But in addition to kind of that criticism, it's not just about being smarter and brighter, because, like, if that's the case, New Jersey has a bunch of wonderful schools, that, like, Catholic schools, J schools, that you can go to and still have a chance to go to a Bowdoin, a Harvard, a Columbia, or whatever. But when it comes to boarding schools, because boarding schools are such a particular thing, and because boarding schools were not built with people like us in mind, i.e. black people, but more importantly, low-income black people, yeah, like, I think it's you have to look beyond just the academics, which is where I say, like, there is a bit of a disservice that these programs do by just focusing on the academics, because fundamentally it's not just about the academics. It's about having enough emotional maturity and intelligence to survive great change. And that's exactly what it is. I had never been around so many white people in my life. And I went to a Catholic school in the suburbs of Montclair in New Jersey, which was, like, majority white. Like, me and my brothers were one of, like, three or four black families. But there was at least always one or two other black kids in my grade.
Yeah.
And at the end of the day, we all went home. So, you know, it wasn't that deep. You have to be a kind of already intellectually and emotionally mature child to go to a boarding school where, like, you don't have your usual support systems, which for most people are their families around you. And you have to basically produce, all the things that you have based, that everyone has invested in you to produce. It is not lost on you, the immense investment that has come from the White Foundation, from your family, for you to get to this boarding school. So, yeah.
Shit, that's crazy.
Yeah, it's wild. And I think, like, the White Foundation, and especially, like, White Foundation scholars really have that extra pressure, because you ain't got no choice but boarding school.
Yeah.
Whereas, like, other people, you know, like Josh and them, for example, who did prep, like, Josh ain't going nowhere. Like, he still had his boys in and around Brooklyn, and they got to, like, you know, for the most part, to still kind of be themselves, even though they had to deal with some nonsense at their schools. And I know you understand this too, kind of, you know, going to a school that didn't always reflect your neighborhood, but at the very least, you got to go home to your neighborhood.
I was, at least, like, I was talking about this, with Brandon when I interviewed him, about how, like, for me, like, the program, because, like, the program from, like, my program started, like, the summer after fifth grade, so it was, like, I had to give up baseball in order to, like, go to, like, the University of Scranton and take classes, and then, you know, take classes at another high school, and then, you know, do that throughout the year, and repeat that, you know, summer after sixth, and then summer after seventh, and then summer after eighth. And so, like, for me, like, I didn't necessarily get to, like, hang out with the kids in my neighborhood, or at least, like, the kids I played baseball with anymore, so I lost those connections. And the kids that I went to the program with became my best friends, and, like, and they're still my best friends to this day, just because they're the only ones that understood kind of, like, the path that I was going on, because, like, in eighth grade, you know, I wasn't applying to the same high schools that, like, my friends were applying to, you know? So I was like, damn, like, we're not going to the same places, like, you know, like we're not even, like, we're different people. So, like, for me, it always, I always felt, like, I want to say different, but just kind of, like, othered by, because of the program and because of the things that I had to let go and because of the experiences that I had. Because, like, you know, I wasn't going to DR during the summers and shit, you know? Like, and so it's funny that you mentioned how, like, you know, like, you know, you still end up going home. But, like, another thing that me and my friends have talked about, like, you know, is how, like, you know, because of these programs, we are kind of, like, made different from the kids in our neighborhood, even though we still get to go back to our neighborhood, just because it's, like, you know, we're not, like, the kids who are, like, you know, I want to say running around the streets and shit, but it's just, like, we're not, like, all the kids from the Bronx, you know? We're, like, have this, we have this kind of, like, what is it called, experience of being in these white spaces, in these privileged spaces, in these spaces of hyper wealth, but we're kind of, like, tasked to represent the kids in our neighborhood, even though we aren't, like, the kids in our neighborhood. So it's very much just, like, an identity crisis. It's just, like, you know, who am I? What am I supposed to do? Like,
I think for me, and, you know, hearing you say this, for me, I'm a unique case in that, like, I'm not the first.
Yeah.
So, like, I'm not the first. I knew this was coming, more or less. Like, I knew I was going to be out. And the second my brothers dipped, I was like, this is going to be me. I can't be in this house with these folks. But more importantly, I went to school outside the neighborhood for the majority of my life.
Yeah.
I only went to school in North for middle school.
Yeah.
Part of that was a decision on my parents' behalf. One, we couldn't afford cats to school no more. It's mad expensive. And more importantly, my parents wanted to be based in Newark so that when I went to, because they remember what they had to do with my brothers traveling back and forth from Montclair, which is like 30 minutes away, traveling back and forth from Montclair to get my brothers to White Foundation. Like, that was a strain. Whereas if I'm 10 minutes away, like, all right, that ain't nothing. Just scoop me, drop me off, or I could take the bus or whatever. And I was also fortunate enough that my best friend, who went to middle school with me, was also in the program with me. So, and his brother was in my brother's class. So, like, I was fortunate enough to have a friend who was still my nigga to this day, who I was really out with yesterday. I'm fortunate enough to have this friend who not only knows what it's like to go to my middle school and go to White Foundation and go through all this prep school stuff, but also knows what it's like for the family to do that.
Yeah.
Like, his mom and my mom are in the parent support group. Like, we in this foundation for sure, but we, like, me and him were spared of the initial pressures of our older brothers because we weren't the first.
Yeah.
So, and I think to your point, it kind of made it better for us when we got home because people were waiting for us rather than us kind of, you know, being like whenever we wanted to link with our friends, like our friends would make time for us because they're like, you only home for a week, you only home for 2 weeks, you only here for the summer. Like, whereas if we had stayed at home or been close to home or been more around, we would have seen kind of like more of the splits with our friends because they're like, you around, but you ain't around. Instead of you literally being like gone.
Yeah.
So I think in that case only, and only in that case will I say that, like, we don't necessarily, like, I won't say we don't have an identity crisis, because we definitely do, because we can't leave our campuses.
Yeah.
So we literally have to be with the white folks, like, all the time. Like, we lay our head next to them, type. We share a bathroom, which is disgusting, with them. But at the same time, it kind of gives it a privilege, because for me, what I did is I just basically, I just had two identities. I was who I was at school, and at least for the first half of my boarding school career, that's how I got through. It's because I was like, basically, I was like, all right, none of my niggas are around to judge me. Let me just be whoever. Let me just be their Negro. Let me be the Becky. Let me be the whatever it takes for me to survive here and get what I can get out of them. And then when I go home, I'm black AF 100%.
Yeah.
So, like, for the longest time, my friends from middle school did not meet my high school friends until after we graduated. I really like to keep my world separate. I was like, y'all, even though we were all black kids, black Hispanic kids, like, very similar histories, they did not meet each other until after I graduated. Because I was like, I really cannot deal with my two worlds colliding like that. Like, it would mess me up.
Very interesting.
So, yeah. But that's just me. But I know other people can relate to that. Like, having to kind of be one way at school. It's kind of a similar way, like, you know, immigrant kids are one way at home and one way at school, even though everybody else at school look like them. Like, you can't be popping off the same way all that nonsense you do at school in your house.
Yeah.
Because your moms can hit you, because your moms can get to you in a way your teachers can't. So, you know, I think it's kind of, to a more significant degree, the kind of who you are at home versus who you are at school, that applies to boarding school in terms of who you are at home in your community and then who you are at school on your campus.
Were you ever selected by the White Foundation to come back and speak?
Nope.
Nah.
Which is like a flaw on the foundation's part, where it's like you need to leverage your alumni network more. Like, I mean, I spoke once. Like, they would ask me to speak. Whenever I would speak, it would either be to, like, parents groups, or it would be to, like, school or church groups. I would never come back and speak to current students, which is where I think that's the kind of flaw. Because White Foundation will 100% leverage its students for, like, promotion.
Yeah.
And to talk to parents and to talk to students, but not really to talk to current students who are like them.
Wow. If you could, like, go back and talk to them, like, what would you say? At least, like, what would you have wanted to hear, like, you know, before, like, you made this, like, decision and shit?
I think, for me, I would want to, like, I just want to keep it 100. Like, I'm definitely someone that, like, I'm not going to play you. I want you to know more or less what you're going to be getting into.
Yeah.
I can't speak for everybody's experience, but one thing I can speak for, like, something that is universal for students like us who go to schools like that, is basically, one, you, who you are is enough. That's the first thing I want to tell people. A big thing that people deal with at the college level, like, I know we've all heard these terms, imposter syndrome and struggling to fit in and kind of feeling the need to kind of hide your blackness or hide your ethnicity. Like, I, for the first year of boarding school, I didn't wear my scarf to bed, which is literally just against hygiene. Like, I denied my hygiene because I wanted to fit in. And that's something that I'm like, I know it's difficult, but, like, don't, like, who you are is enough. I'm not gonna blame you if you don't want to be caught, you know, wearing your do-rag or whatever. Like, that's a personal choice, that's on you. But please try your best to not feel ashamed about that, because that's just you. Two, not everybody gotta be your friend, but try and make friends. A lot of black students really like to just either isolate themselves or which is part of the reason why like some of our relationships with our student with our teachers in boarding schools are so strong, especially like, you know, either our coaches or like the black faculty member who works in admissions or even the kitchen staff. Like, I knew all of them because, like, you know, it is what it is. But at the same time, like, don't knock some of these white folks out just because they white. Mm. Like, try and, you know, not everyone has to be a friend, not everyone has to like you, but please try and make friends. Like, do things you wouldn't normally do, and you, like, some of my best friends I found was when I did cross country, which I'll never do again, but I did cross country, and, like, some of my, like, three of my best friends that I met there in the cross country, like, running around and shit. So, you know, try and make friends, but not everybody gotta be your best. And then the last and kind of, I won't even say most important thing, but, it, you know, it's kind of the reason why you left. Get everything you can get out of your experience. Whether that be, you know, learning, like, in the classroom, whether it means, like, paying attention to your classes, taking more advanced classes to challenge yourself, or whether it be, you know, doing something that can be at times uncomfortable, like going to your friend's house for a birthday dinner.
Yeah.
Or like for example, something I did was I went with my best friend slash roommate. She's Jewish. I went to temple with her. Oh. It was Rosh Hashanah, and I went to temple with her, and then we had a Seder. Like, I'm not Jewish. I don't know no Jews like that, but like, I pulled up, you know, I ate the gefilte fish, I did that. I put myself in that situation because, like, at the end of the day, like, this is my homie, and as much as she is, like, letting me into her personal home, which was nice as fuck, because yeah. She's rich, like, I, you know, get, like, that's what I mean by get the most out of your experience. Because how many rich Jews you know around in the Bronx that you know, like, personally? Like, how many, like you don't have these experiences, and they're not as easy to form in college either. I ain't been to nobody's house in college. Yeah. Well, I ain't been to no rich white person's house in college. Yeah. I've been to other homes. But, like, I ain't been to nobody's house in college like that. I was in and out of people's homes at boarding school because, like, you know, when you're younger, you can just kind of develop this, like, close. And because you're younger, your, like, parents are more willing to look out for you. The amount of dinners I had sponsored, or like casual mall trips, or just like, you know, weekends at a friend's house, like, those are things that, like, are invaluable. Like, so, like, get the most that you can out of these schools, because when it's done, oh, hunty, it's done. Like, in college, you will just have broke friends, I promise you. So, like, even if they're rich, you will have broke friends.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
So those are the three things I would say, like, do that. Know yourself, love yourself, make friends, but not everybody got to be your friend.
Yeah.
And, like, put yourself into uncomfortable situations, or, like, not even uncomfortable, but, like, put yourself in situations that you wouldn't normally do, because you'll grow. And that helped me a lot. Like, once I got to Bowdoin, wasn't nothing. Like, I tell everybody, like, as much as people like to complain about Bowdoin and Bowdoin has its problems, I 100,000,000% enjoyed college more than I did in high school.
Because,
yeah. You know, Westie was, what, 300-400 students, basically all conservative, sports, gun-clutching motherfuckers. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, Bowdoin may be still white and liberal, but, like, there's just other things I don't have to deal with, and there's more freedoms I could have, and, you know, there's more space and ability to be myself, because these boarding schools have aggressively homogenous cultures.
Yeah.
You either can fall in line, or they make you fall in line.
Aggressive.
And that's that on that. In a way that colleges just fundamentally can't do. Bowdoin has a strong culture, too, but it's not a culture that demands you to fall in line.
Yeah. Because, like, you know, you're pretty much an adult. Like, you're supposed to know yourself. Versus, like, you're fucking 14, you're just, like...
Exactly. Like, there needs to be that structure. One, because, like, legally, for liability reasons.
Yeah.
But more importantly, like, because you're younger, and our kind of general notion on society is that, like, younger kids need structure and a clear-cut culture that they should adhere to. Like, that's great if you fit the culture, but when you don't, it can really cause a lot of internal strife.
Yeah.
Which is what most Black students, Latino students, non-white and non-rich students face.
Yeah, it's interesting that you bring it up, that, like, you know, behavior is a big part of it, because, like, what I see is kind of, like, these programs aren't necessarily, like, I don't want to be like they don't care, but it's, like, their main goal isn't to, like, see you succeed, but they want to see the best possible person, like, you know, who will succeed in these type of situations, and whether that be, like, they can follow the rules, they can, you know, act, they can, you know, just act how they need to act, and, because it's like what you said, you know, there's a bunch of smart kids, but, like, if they don't know how to, like, you know, conform to these, like, social scenarios, if they don't have the emotional maturity or the intelligence, then it's, like, they won't be able to succeed. And, like, you know, the programs can see that, and they'll be, like, you gotta go. So it's pretty
exactly.
much,
like, and even beyond that, it's also... Part of the jobs of these schools is that they're trying to break pathologies.
Yeah.
So, for example, I had a friend of mine who ain't make it past the summer because of behavior.
Yeah.
Smart dude, good athlete. Like, man's is like six. He's like 6'5" now. So, like, good. You know, like, definitely could have made it. Except he got a hothead. You know, he got a real temper. And, you know, he like a light-skinned Trini dude or whatever. And basically, I was talking to him like a year or two back, because he lived around the corner. And he was just like, yeah, there was no way I could have gone to that school because I'm not going to sit there and let some white man tell me something that, like, I'm not going to listen to some white man's opinion. Like, what the fuck does he know?
Yeah.
And, like, right then when he said that, I was like, sir, I 100% agree with you.
Yeah.
I definitely do. But if you were to say this out and about, like, even in the dorm casually, they will automatically pathologize you as an angry, aggressive Black dude. And that could cause problems for you. Even though you're 100% right. Like, and, you know, as a man, like, I know, you know, you, like, I don't know what happens, but, like, I know men, and especially Black men, given our history with, like, white people, is, like, to stand your ground. You're not gonna be no white man's bitch.
Yeah.
Because so much of history has told you you are. But at the same time, when you are in the white man's land, and he has all the powers and resources to make or break you, they don't want to see that fighting spirit. Not only like, for your own sake. Because, like, if you get labeled, like, Black kids are very rarely given the benefit of the doubt.
Yeah.
If you get labeled as the angry Black boy, the argumentative Black boy, the one who wants to fight, you will not see the end of the year. They will kick your ass out, and that's on your record. And if you don't have some serious resources in your backyard, guess where you going? Right the fuck back to public school. And everything you did would have been for nothing. So I think that's even more importantly what they look for in terms of behavior, is that, like, they don't want to see their investment go to waste, and more importantly, they don't want to see you go through that experience of being pathologized as a problem.
Yeah.
But that's just my opinion. You know, other people might disagree, but that's what I think.
Yeah, because, like, I know it's not, like they let people go, like, you know, with the best intentions, not like, oh, you know, you're not enough, but it's, like, you know, based off, like, you know, like, this path just may not be for you, you know.
Mm-hmm. And it's not, you know, it's really not for everyone.
Yeah.
Like, most white Americans don't even know about most of the schools that we go to. So it's kind of like, you know, at the, you know, it is a privilege. It's not a right by any means to go to a boarding school, to go to a prep school. It's 100% a privilege. That's the point. But to that same point, you know, that privilege manifests itself differently on different people.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the other important part. For some of these people, like some of the people I went to boarding school with who were objectively messes, just like drug addicts, alcoholics, like bad just the, you know, terrible, exactly, like bad students, they, once they got into trouble or got kicked out of the school, just went to another school. Like, there would literally be some people that we would be on the same team in the fall, and then by the spring, we're rivals. So, you know, they had that big safety net that, like, no matter what they did, you know, mommy, daddy, any other body in their network would just get them a new school. We, like, people who go through these programs are not afforded that often. It's like, this is your one shot. Don't screw it up. And so that privilege comes, it's conditional, and it comes with pressure.
The people who ran the programs, like, what were the demographics? Like, the people who helped you out?
Like, the staff and stuff?
Yeah.
Yeah, everybody was Black and Latino. Everybody's still Black and Latino. Ain't no white people. There was Mr. Kramer. I love Mr. Kramer. He was a white man. And he was our college counselor. But mostly, like, the director, like, the heads of the pro, besides Mr. White, the director, Black lady, the, like, other director, Black dude, like, the receptionist is Latina, the like, coordinator, like, and at White Foundation right now, a lot of the staff, when this wasn't necessarily the case when I was going there, but right now, a lot of the staff is former alumni.
Yeah. Like, same for my program.
Yeah, so, like, which is good and bad, if you ask me, but it is what it is. But when I was going, when I was in STEP, the majority of the staff was not alumni. In fact, no one was, maybe one person.
Yeah.
But, yeah, just, like, one. But there were people who had been there for a long time and were very familiar with, like, the culture of the company and the cultures of boarding school, even though they didn't go themselves.
So is it, like, a non-profit or just, like...
I think so. I think it's a non-profit.
And, like, because, like, for these, like, for me, like, my program was connected to, like, a high school. And, like, you know, it was, like, white people and shit. Like, the counselors were, like, you know, Black and brown. Because some of them, at least, like, it had been running so long that, like... By the time that I was running, by the time that I went, like, the first people that went to the program were in college now. We're now, like, you know, kind of, like, leading us. But, it's, like, do you think that, like, that demographic had any, like, it changed the way that it was run, or, like, it changed the way that, like, you interacted with the people there?
I think the biggest effect that had was, when it came to serious talks and discipline, I think seeing Black and brown faces gave their voices more authority. Because, like, it was, you know, it replicated a structure that for the most part we were all familiar with.
Yeah.
So having a director being a Black female is like having the director of your house, your mom's, you know. It was very similar. Like, the way she would talk to us, you would understand it because it was, like, the way your mom talked to you. And the same thing with our other director, who was, you know, Black male. Like, he would come at you. Like, their roles were, she was kind of more, like, soft and nurturing, and he was the disciplinarian. And so, like, that kind of dynamic and everyone's role made sense, but it had more authority that it wasn't just, like, what we were used to, or like what we thought, you know, we were gonna get, which was basically just like a bunch of white people barking orders at us.
Yeah.
It was like people, like, it, we were able to foster that kind of more family feel because we all kind of, you know, we got where we were coming from the most part.
That's a brilliant.
And also, a lot of people, like, you know, White Foundation is majority, like, immigrants.
Yeah.
Like, either Caribbean or African. So, you know, there's certain kind of, like, there's certain things that, like, even if you're a white immigrant, like, you're not going to be able to understand this.
Yeah.
Like, even if you're just somebody who just came, you fresh from, I don't fucking know, like, Spain or Canada or something. Like, you're an immigrant. You can understand, to some degree, the immigrant life. Like, you don't understand what it's like to be an immigrant in a majority immigrant neighborhood where people look black and brown. And that kind of experience is what you really need, especially for a bunch of, you know, kids who you're trying to give structure to and tell them that what you're saying is right.
Yeah.
And more importantly, to get their parents on board with that too, and not think that their kids are getting played or sold out to some, you know, to something, to some program. It's paramount that you have staff that looks like the community you serve.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Damn. I think that I'm good with that. I'm shit. You give me so much damn easy. I was so excited to talk because I knew you were gonna give me this. Like, yes.
I mean, I have the knowledge, so damn. You gotta share it.
Trust with parents. That's very interesting because I remember, like, at least, like, so, like, my best friend in middle school, you know, he got also selected for the program. But, you know, his, like, his mom was just, like, his mom thought that he had to pay, so he didn't do it. And so, it's, like, you know, he got, and, like, you know, he applied to the same high school that I applied to, but they didn't give him enough financial aid, and, like, you know, he didn't know he could appeal for more and shit, so, like, he went to the school that gave him a full ride, and the school that gave him the full ride, you know, wasn't a bad school, but it was, like, you know, it was majority black and brown kids, and so, like, you know, he grew up with, like, you know, or, like, Gucci belts was cool in high school type shit, not, like, Vineyard Vines or something like that.
So exactly. It's
like, you know, his whole life path, you know, like, he had the chance, the same choices that I could, but, like, his mom just didn't know, like, what the program was about. And, you know, now he's at UAlbany, and it's not like it's a bad school, but it's just, like, you know, he could have been on the
same path. He went to UAlbany?
Yeah.
That nigga partying.
Yeah, he could have been on the same path that I could have been on, you know, but it's, like...
Yeah.
You know, just that one flaw of, like, miscommunication. Yeah. Like, you know, he thought he had to pay when he didn't have to pay. Or it's like, you know.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And that's the other thing. That's the other thing about having staff that looks like you is because, like, you know, there have been money questions from the dawn of time. But I know, like, there are many people who are either, you know, undocumented, or they're not comfortable with their abilities to speak English in a way that, and for those reasons, it frightens them when they have to talk to white people.
Yeah.
Because white people are basically either an arm of the government, or they're people who will fundamentally not understand you.
Yeah.
So when you have staff that speaks Portuguese, that speaks Spanish, that is at least black... You know, like, black people don't necessarily have a problem talking to black people.
Yeah.
Whoever they are. Because there's a certain kind of, like, mutual ground and understanding that you can get with black people. In a way that, like, you just cannot with white people. And I think that's really key in terms of, like, because for kids this young, parent involvement is so key. It's so key. Ain't no decision being made without the parents knowing, like, legally. So, it's so key. Like, you really have to think about the ways you engage and make parents feel comfortable. Because if a parent feels uncomfortable and decides to pull their kid out and yank them out, that is a missed opportunity for the kid only.
Yeah.
And it's a pity. It's really just, like, a pity. Because it's, like, something that could have really just been explained away with a simple chat, with a simple talk, maybe even a translator and interpreter. Like... And now it's the result of, you know, a whole life trajectory change in a kid.
Yeah, like, my director, like, he was white, but he spoke Spanish. Like, you know, white Spanish, you know, learned that shit in school. But, like, for me, it was just, like, I was, like, I wrote my, like, you know, I don't know if your program did it, but, like, the parent had to write an essay for the application. And I wrote the essay for my mom, you know, like I basically wrote what I had to write. And it's just like I was translating throughout the entire thing and just kind of just seeing that, just hearing that, like, you know, like your experience was, you know, you had the people that looked like you, that talked your language and all these other things. Like, I wonder how my program would have, like, changed if, like, that was the case. But, you know, I just, like, as of now, like, you know, one of the directors, like, he was a dude that, like, was there in high school. And so, like, he has experience with DACA because I think he is DACA himself or something like that. So these people really just fucking out here making noise.
For real.
So it's like, because like my whole project is about, you know, learning about these programs and kind of just like their goals and like these the purpose of like, you know, these conversations is to like, you know, understand like what the students feel at the end of the day and like what they believe could like they can like they can improve upon because they went through the programs. You know, every program is different. A lot of them like do similar tactics, have like the similar mission, have a similar process, but it's like the experience is kind of like it's similar but also very different in some key places. And like how you mentioned it, you know, it's like all Black Atlantic staff. I hear the pots and pans in your background too. And and how it's like, you know, like at least with your program, like the focus was just boarding school. Like, you know, you're a boarder or you're out. And how I think that's very, very interesting just because it's like it kind of like it limits the student on what they can and cannot do. At least I can and cannot dream about. And like, you know, you have to have that conversation with your parents. Like, you know, the fact that they gave you a questionnaire and shit, you know, and it's like, you know, like, do you want to do this? Like my program didn't have that. It was more so like, you know, they looked at my grades and they were just like, all right, you can go here. No, they're literally like, all right, you're probably going to have a tough time getting into here. You can look at these other places, but I think this is the best match for you. And it was a school that was in the Bronx. And, you know, they gave me the most aid because literally when we didn't understand, like, you know, like I remember I got my financial aid package for like some high schools. I was like, yo, man, they gave me like $7,000. Mallet, yo, mom, I want to go here, And she was just like, hold up, this shit costs like 20. Like, $7,000 isn't going to do anything for us. And I was just like, oh, fuck, like, what am I going to do? I called the director. He's just like, all right, you're going to write an email, you're going to do this, and they're going to give you the money, I promise you. And then, you know, I asked both of the high schools, and only one of them got back to me. It was the one that he told me would get back to me. So it's like,
yeah,
they can see which they literally
because they know, they lobby on your behalf.
Yep.
But more importantly, like they can't do it for you.
Yep.
They can only coach you through it because at the end of the day, you and your moms is the one who got to sit down, write that email, asking for money, explaining, you know, how much you need. And these are just tools that people in our community just don't know. We don't know how to lobby for ourselves.
Yeah.
And it's not our fault. But it's a disservice at the end of the day because we don't know how to lobby for ourselves. So yeah.
Shit. All right, I don't want to take up any more of your time. This has been the best conversation I've had. Damn. I miss talking to you. Fuck. I miss smoking with you. I miss everything. God damn.
Yeah, I know. It's actually some real bullshit. I was not done. I was not done with my senior year. Yeah. I had so many plans for the
antics,
like for
antics.
The last part. Just straight antics. Like I had, and I was gonna be rich. I mean, I'm still rich, but like, and I was gonna have money.
The
and I was gonna
money.
Keep working. Ooh. Like, yo, I'm not gonna hold you. I was about to cop an O and buy like 7 bottles, but you know, yeah, because I gotta make the elixir. The elixir has 6.
It got
Brugal. 2 types of Brugal, Bacardi, Cuervo, and Alizé.
It would have been a great sophomore like spring. And I was on track to have all A's too and shit. It's crazy. Like,
yeah, no, for real, my grades are gonna be sexy as fuck too.
But you got full bread, right? You know, my friend told me that like they pushed their shit back to like January or something like that.
Yeah, that actually sucks for a lot of niggas. It don't affect me because my shit was gonna start in February anyway, so my Fulbright is still on track. But like for other niggas who's gonna start like next month or like at the end of the summer type shit,
August.
they're not reimbursing them. They're just cutting their Fulbright by that many months. Yeah, it's actually real bullshit, Giancarlo. Like, so if I was gonna start my Fulbright in, let's say, August. Basically, I lose August, September, October, November, December, and then I have to start. That's basically half my time because most of these programs are a year. Nice. So most people are literally losing half to the majority of their times.
And it's not like, oh, like, you know, it's like pushed back. It's just like,
it's just cut. And more importantly, Fulbright, you can only do once. You can never reapply to be a Fulbright scholar. Yeah. So it's actually some bullshit.
Damn, I feel bad for that girl too. I mean, high key, nah, she was gonna go to medical school, like. Like her plans are like.
I mean, it's unfortunate. It's just unfortunate. Like you can't necessarily feel bad, but you can. It's just unfortunate. It's like.